bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. We're here discussing all things photography and the week's goings on in the photography news. I'm joined by the usual crew. Top left, we've got Mr. Chris Forsman, Sniffles of Chicago.
Just a bit of an allergy, no big whoop.
How you doing, sparring boy?
I'm doing okay.
Good week.
Had a pretty awesome story I put in the can on Wednesday, so I feel pretty good about that.
About what was the story about?
The MacBook Pro, right? The MacBook Pro battery controversy.
Oh, what's that? Go on, tell us some more.
Did a lot of research into the, you know, how it, talked to some recyclers about how difficult it is to recycle, and some of these. I guess it's fair to call them activists, you know. Insist that it's difficult to recycle, and that means it shouldn't qualify for an EP rating. You know, we talked to some bigger recyclers who said it's really not that big a deal, and it turns out the EP's actually investigating the whole situation with not just the Retina MacBook Pro, but Ultrabooks in general, just to see if, as well as looking into other devices that have glued-in batteries, just to see, like, you know, if they need to have any special requirements or qualifications, you know, if batteries are glued into a device.
Okay, good. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I'll be polite. Next thing we've got...
Why are you on it?
Next thing we've got Alex Fox. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. I haven't done any research into anything this week.
Having a good time of it at the moment, I gather.
Oh, yeah. The blessed relief of having some work. No, right. It's been really good lately. Long may it continue. But I think London... August is going to be a write-off for most of us, so let's get ahead of the game so that we can take August off. That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Steve Neighbour the other night, I think before you arrived, and he was saying he's got this theory that as many people are leaving London as are coming to London for the games.
Well, in the very posh parts of London, all the private schools broke up about a week and maybe 2 weeks ago now, and
yeah,
there's residence parking spaces wherever you look. So
they've all gone.
They've all gone.
Jolly good. Excellent, excellent news. The week photography. Let's start off with Sigma. Sigma have released a brand new lens. There it is. It's 180mm. It's gorgeousness. It's 2.8. It's macro. And it's going to cost you $1,699. First thoughts? It's an EX as well, so it's not the DC, so it means it'll fit all full phone cameras as well. It's not just the digital compacts. Any first thoughts?
It looks pretty.
It looks black, doesn't it? I mean, it's the gold ring.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first thing that struck me, I've got to say, when I first read the story, I looked at this and saw £1,699, and my first thought was, well, you can get 70 to 200 mm Canon 2.8 for that. That's going to be far better at the long stuff. Okay, it doesn't have macro, but I still think, now I've looked at dollars, is that still a bit pricey over there, Chris?
That's a hefty lens. I'm trying to remember if it's Nikon or Canon, I think, makes a 200mm 2.8 1:1 macro. And the issue with macro lenses, though, is that they're very specially formulated to have a very flat field coming out of the rear element, so that you get corner to corner sharpness.
Right.
And it's also optimized for really close focusing, which is
of course,
you know, it's tricky. So I think that kind of jacks the price. The fact that also too, it's going to have a limited appeal. You know, that kind of raises the price a little bit too. So I'm not sure that it's too pricey exactly for what it is, but it's definitely, you know, when you're spending that much money on glass, you probably already have some other expensive lenses in your stable. That'd be my guess.
Yeah. Alex, any thoughts?
Or a pretty specific need, you know, something like medical or scientific.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a case use for this you know, for my work, quite often if I've got a piece of work that's still on the wall because it can't be brought down to me, you know, sometimes it's been in a stately home for 300 years and no one's got quite long enough ladders to get the painting down. This sort of lens would be, you know, really good for me. I mean, one of the problems I have is with long lenses is if they're not a macro lens, then you get, you have to do so much in Photoshop to make sure the corners are a little bit sharper and sort of the vignetting's not there and various things. And, you know, if this lens, because it's a macro, I might not necessarily use the macro facility, but because it's built as a macro, I'm going to get a lot better corner-to-corner reproduction. So for someone like me, whereas, you know, as Chris has explained, it's slightly flatter and it's designed to focus the whole range of the lens, you know, for me, this would be quite useful. And price wise, I don't think it's too expensive if there's a, you know, a proper dollar to pound, you know, conversion. But if it comes out at £1,700, then I'd say too much. But if it comes out at £1,000 to £1,200, I'd say, you know what? If the lens is good, there's not many on the market of this type, and for me, there's a proper case use.
Has Nikon got something kind of similar? I know Canon has, and as I say, they've got the 70-200 sports lens, which which is nice.
Yeah, they do have similar. They're slightly more, but the only Nikon I've got that's similar is a zoom, and quite often, I mean, I use it because of, you know, if I can't physically get to something, I've got to do any trick I can to get it in frame. If it's a long fixed lens, and obviously I can get close enough to make use of the lens, this would be superior.
Hmm. So are we saying good buy, bad buy at $1,700?
It's a good buy, but there's not that many people that are going to need it.
Yeah. No day out shooters. Same things, Chris?
Yeah. Like I said, it's going to have a limited appeal. That doesn't mean it's bad. And it doesn't even mean it's really expensive for what you get, but it's just going to be expensive for I'd say most shooters out there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with it's a big long lens, and the thing I like about the 70-200, it's got that variability of 70-200 for a start, and still got 2.8 all the way up and through. And with this, you know, it's too short for a train spotter or a plane spotter or something like that, or even a wildlife photographer. And it's still a long, big, heavy lens. That's what the one thing that would put me off.
One of the things, though, I don't know if this is what they're going for, but it would work quite well as a video lens. You know, a fixed video lens.
Yeah, from distance. Okay, I get that. Macro as well, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. But, of course, it's sitting on the full frames, so that's a really good point. I knew we asked you on here for a reason, mate.
Ah, finally, after 2 years, I've come up with a good point.
There we go.
Say they agree.
We need to put your dogs on the credits, mate, because they're on every week. Instagram, rather, Time Magazine wants your Instagram photos. Time's looking at the role of the cell phone in everyday life, and they want your phone pictures to help them illustrate their project. If you've got any, then just put the hashtag Time Wireless on it, and you could be famous. You're not going to get a penny for any of these or not.
Yeah, I bet they want your blooming pictures. What a cheek.
Well, there's a lot been happening with Instagram at the moment. There's a guy that's got, he photographed the Major League Baseball guys with an iPhone using Instagram, and he's got some fantastic images at the moment. They're really, really good. Is this the day and age we live in, you know, that we were talking, there's been a huge thing in the UK at the moment talking about whether texting's overtaking phone calls and whether it's dumbing down a communication. I mean, this is just the evolution of photography, you know, like it or not, the purists will hate it. And I'm not totally comfortable with it, but, you know, 80% of the world's photography is being done on cell phones and at this kind of quality level.
No. Sorry, carry on, Chris.
I was going to say, I just recently I did a big write-up about here in the U.S., both Walgreens and Fujifilm have these new APIs that they're offering to mobile developers. So basically you can integrate real photographic printing from photos into mobile apps. And, there's already a couple that have the Walgreens system built in, and I live just down the street from one. So I was like, hey, I should try this out and see how it works. And I did, and I was really pleased with the results. And the thing that just struck me is the commenters on the article were just talking about how, I should say several of the commenters went on and on about how terrible cell phone pictures take terrible pictures and that this crap and it's not worth printing and all, the only thing worth printing is from a professional DSLR and it's been edited in Photoshop and blah blah blah. And I'm just like, you know what? What a stuck-up jerk, you know? I mean, it's mate, who are you to decide what's important to me to print?
You are talking to the Antichrist to photography columnist posters, mate. I've got a myth or truth on Raw coming out, mate. So, and that one should get me maybe even a fatwa or a death threat.
Yeah, if you let me pre-read it, I can get your.
No, fatwa. I am sending it to both of you before I push it out.
I can get your fatwa put on before you even print it.
It's built to be contentious before we even start, but if I get anything technically wrong in it, I am absolutely and utterly screwed.
that could be fun. I'm going to tell you a load of crap and get you to put it in it.
what Chris is saying is, you know, it is the evolution of photography. You know, people write reviews in and people send emails in to me saying, I don't understand why you keep going on about iPhone. iPhone is not photography. Yes, it is. It is by the virtue of the fact that everyone is doing it. I'm awfully sorry. And the quality, I've got my iPhone, I'm shooting 8 megapixel images at work now for people with it if I'm stuck. And I've also shot 1080p video with it. I've thought about buying a little helicopter to fly around carrying it, taking 1080p video. There's an awful lot of good stuff going on out there in that kind of market. Teresa's said they've got...
I feel like I wonder, you know, back in the like early 1900s or even in the 1930s, I can imagine like view camera users and someone comes along and is like, hey, check out this Leica with 35mm film. And they were like,
never catch
that's it. Not photography, whatever.
Unless it's a 10x8 plate.
I've been sitting here really quietly waiting for my moment and the little bugger jumps in and nicks it.
Unless you have to count in seconds the exposure, it's not photography.
Yeah, that's what I do. I hold my iPhone, I click it, and I go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then they always think I'm doing it properly.
And then there's the famous war between the US and the UK over whether it's 1 Mississippi or 1,000.
I do crocodile still.
You still do crocodile? Because crocodile's shorter than 1,000.
Yeah. It depends on your accent. If you've got a stutter, you're in real trouble. Right.
Do you guys do alligator as well? Because that would be a crocodile alligator dispute, never mind. Sorry, Alex, you got some sense.
Right, well, first of all, right, as for, you know, iPhones, are they real photography? Just to make sure Chris doesn't get all the kudos on his point, when cameras first came out, it was a piece of paper, right, in a box of a pinhole, right? And it wasn't a lens, it was nothing, and that is pure photography, right? So the fact that you've got a really flash camera and you've got 10x8 plates, or you've got a really high resolution digital and a really fancy lens, that's not what makes photography. What makes photography is capturing light in a device and being able to reproduce it or store it in some way. That is what photography is, right? Full stop. And anyone that doesn't agree with me is just basically wrong, right? Now, what's wrong here?
I feel the emails. Go.
As long as I go, you and I don't care. Time, what I don't like about this story is what Time are trying to do. They're trying to make themselves the place to send these images. And that is wrong because Time make money. That's what they do. There should be, I mean, the BBC have done it here for years. And now I think the British Museum have got it as well. And they're the right people to do it because what they are doing is they are trying to catch a social history of this country. Mm. Okay. And what they say is, you know, upload out your images to us, send them to us, do whatever, but we will store them for years and years to come. So it will be there for historians and people to be able to look back and see what Britain or whatever the place is will be like in years to come. I work for the Royal Geographical Society and, you know, I do all their work. And what they basically do, they've kept from when the British first went out around the world, they took photos as soon as, I mean, they painted before that, but they took photos.
They did burn an awful lot of things as well, though.
Apparently, I am wrong, apparently, but never mind. But my point is, that's what it is. But the thing is, it's a charity. It was always set up for somewhere. It was for the whole world to have access to these things eventually. And that's what the British Museum do. The BBC do it with film. And lots of companies are now doing it, but I don't think it should be something where someone else is going to benefit. Time are doing this because Time want to have their Time pictures of whatever year we're in, 2012,
yeah, exactly.
In December, so that they can print it, and then Time will sell millions of copies of whatever it is at a profit. It's not. If you wanted to do it, there's plenty of places will take it as a social history of where you live. So please don't send them to Time. Time can write to me all they like as well. Don't send it to them. Just there's places where it should go, and it's a very good idea to do it, but make sure it goes to the right place, not to Time.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point here from Teresa in the chat room. They had a bunch of Instagram pics in the local news of the storms that rolled in a few days ago. Sadly, most of them were bad because people don't know how to use the filters or how to take good pictures. And there's a good point in that, because if you know, Barry Collins, who's amply able with his cell phone, took a picture of the sub, you know, the tube car, the London Underground carriage that he was in, stuck an Instagram filter on it, and it actually looked really arty. It was great, and the bland image would have been bad on its own. You've got to start with a good core before you can make it look any better. No question. A firm called Canon Mark, who's a Chinese bunch, have decided to create a flash head that looks like this. It's got four speed lights on it, effectively. It's got some LEDs that act as a model light or a video light, and your camera points through the middle, so it works like a ring flash, and there's no word on price or any time that it's going to come out. It's called the Canon Mark IQ. It's nothing to do with Canon. It's just to do with a firm called Canon Mark. So, A, would you buy it, and B, at what price?
And C, could you take the lawsuits when you blind everybody that you photograph?
Is that a HAL 9000 upgrade, says Grant in the chat room?
Well, it looks like. You know, you see the sub, I don't know what you call them, the scuba diving guys that have the really expensive video camera. That's what it looks like. It just looks like they've gone, hold on a minute, we could do this on land. No, you can't. The reason it works in water is because water works as its own filter. It disperses it. And you need a ton of light to be able to see 2 inches in water. On land, all you're going to do is absolutely burn out everything you possibly point that camera at.
But you're assuming there's no TTL metering for it.
Oh, there's got to be TTL.
but you'd have to shoot TTL. Everything at, I don't know, a 45th, F44 or something. You know, I don't know what you'd have to shoot it at just to be able to see. You basically have to turn it down so low. I mean, I don't know, for instance, I don't do a lot of people anymore. You know, it's not something I enjoy, but part of the shooting objects and people is the fact that there is a difference and there is shadows. You're not going to have a single shadow. Just every crack in the face is going to be filled in with light. It's just, it's, I don't know what
But that's generally really flattering because it hides like wrinkles and
sure, but you might know, as well
shadows under the nose and things like that.
You might as well overexpose it by 20 stops, and that's quite flattering as well.
It is clear to me you do not like working with other people.
No. I mean, that's why I only do shows via a webcam, just in case I'm in the same room as them. I can't really see a point. I mean, someone will buy this because they've got no understanding of the subtleties of light. You know, some people think more is better. And, you know, I'll let you comment.
I mean, I think 4 ring flashes is a very intense amount of light to have, even with a softening ability of TTL, perhaps. And I don't see why you'd need that many in that much of a location when a 2-head would be more than enough and probably half the cost. Because most of those macro stuff are 2-head, aren't they?
God, can you imagine the battery pack you'd need to carry around with that? You have to have your own generator.
Actually, that ring around the outside, it's actually a ring round of point-to-point triple A's, like this all the way around.
Or it's a small version of the Hadron Collider.
Apparently, breaking news, Sir Patrick Stewart is on Twitter. He's just started. He's just this minute joined. And Dr. Happy Mac,
he's just signed him up without telling him,
hasn't
he?
Has signed him on, and it's him. He's following 33 people, and he's got one follower, which is me. Unless I've just been added. But there you go, at Sir Pat Stew is the...
I gotta look this
up. Is the Twitter name. Allegedly, it's him.
We do have the means of checking.
Oh, it's a private account.
Yes.
Yeah, but I know who just put the code. I know who just put the password in.
You know who just put the password in?
Yeah, if it's set up that way. I know who set it up for him.
That's what I'm saying. I think DHM's done it.
Exactly.
If it's so really him and we're not being had, but Teresa's put it in, at Sir Pat Stewart, and Russ has put it in as well. There we go. You heard it first here. Breaking news. I was his first follower.
Oh, look, he's left again.
There we go. Has he left?
No, I was joking. Just if you're his only follower, I think I'd hang up as well.
What should we do next? Should we do the Lumix? There's a whole pile of stuff came out from Lumix ahead of Photokina. This, and I've got to make sure I pick the right model, otherwise I'll get another kick in the emails,
it's a
camera. SZS. SZ5, sorry. That is a Panasonic Lumix SZ5. It's fixed with a super zoom on it, and it's in red.
I like the finish on that. It's
I thought it was going to be crap and horrible, and I hated it, but it's not. It's okay. And they do one in black as well, which is nice.
A black's old hat now, isn't it?
21 times optical zoom.
That's a lot of zoom.
That's a lot of zoom. That's a steady on. Take a deep breath before you point it anywhere.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of specs on this, though, I have to say, in terms of... I'm trying to scroll down the list and find it. But there's this one, and there's an LZ20 as well, and there's a whole load of compacts that have come out, a DMC LZ20, that's it. There's loads of them. Why have they come out before? This just seems a bit early to me, Chris, no?
No, well, because they're all trying to jump the gun on getting the press before Photokina.
Yeah.
This happens every time. I mean, it started happening, I'd say... I don't know, 2003, 2004, because all these rumors would come out right before Photokina or PMA, and we would hear the rumors, and we would start calling our sales reps and be like, okay, what's coming? Let's get us ready so when customers start coming in and asking, we know what to tell them. Mm. They're just like, we don't know.
Yeah.
So I think they're just all, they're all trying to outdo each other. And getting the big, the big press before the show starts.
So the it's a Panasonic CCD. It's got 16 megapixels in it. It'll shoot aspect ratio 16:943. It's got 1/2000th of the second maximum shutter, and its f-stopping goes from, and I just had it and I've lost it, 3.1 to 8.9. I just thought the spec there seems quite samey. Only goes up to 1600 ISO. It does expand to 6400, but if it's only got an average range to 1600, you would expect that to probably be unusable. It doesn't seem to do anything particularly different.
Well, here's what's interesting about the, they're claiming that it's like the best compact camera system out there, but isn't the OM5 16 megapixel already?
Yep. That's what I'm saying. Right? I don't think there's anything that's not been done here. There's nothing in those specs that flies out at me as something that would set it apart, that would make me want to part with some cash for it over what I've currently got. If you're sitting on, I can't remember what the old model was, but if you're sitting on that, you don't see a huge need to change on that. I think it was 14, the one before. And I don't know what the price is because there's no prices on these, but if it's 100 quid short of going to the G series, you'd go surely and get the changeability lenses.
Yeah, that's the thing though. A lot of people don't want that, do they? They want a one stop shop.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't an either or. This is an either or rather than a one. I don't think one necessarily leads up to the other with this sort of camera. If I have a compact system, I actually use a J1 or something the other day. And here you go.
The Nikon?
Yeah, here you go. I thought it was crap. There you go. I have said it. And I'm even recording this myself. I really didn't like it. I thought the whole thing, I didn't like the way the flash came up. I didn't like any of that. I just thought it was gimmick over substance, and I really wasn't that impressed with it. It had a really bad delay. It had trouble focusing in low light. There was loads of things with it, and I was thinking, you know what? They put this out as a flagship. I've noticed the prices have gone down, and I've also noticed they've stopped pushing it because I don't think it's a. I don't think it was ready. I think they tried to get out and they tried to compete with these people. Well, Panasonic, Olympus, the people that do these small cameras properly are these people, and some of these other companies should just keep out of the market. And I think
I think the thing that struck me about the Nikon One series is that they went with this custom. And not entirely custom, but they went with it instead of going with Micro Four Thirds and kind of like buying into this, you know, system that Olympus and Panasonic in particular have invested a lot in, and like being part of that ecosystem, they went with their own spec for the sensor, which is smaller. Mm-hmm. And their argument is, part of their argument was, well, you know, our stuff can be even smaller, but it's really not any smaller. I mean, the J1 is not appreciably smaller than my EP3 that I've got here. No. But you have smaller sensors, so you have more noise. You have, you know, more problems in low light. It just struck me as odd, and I still don't think it makes any sense.
No, well, my first-hand experience was that was incredibly disappointing. But I mean, I think people like Panasonic, I think the market is definitely spitting into who is good at what. And Panasonic, with their Lumix range, I think I would have said Panasonic and, say, Fuji are really good in that middle range bridge camera type of area. And so, you know, if you don't have a bridge camera, I would have said this Panasonic is a really good place to start. But, you know, once you start doing cameras, which I don't know what really is called bridge anymore. I mean, if you can change the lens, is it a bridge camera? I would have said it's a small SLR.
It's ones you need a hacksaw for interchangeability.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, there's a place for having a fixed lens that doesn't do anything. There's loads of problems with changing lenses. There's loads of sort of compatibility issues. There's loads of, you know, the softness around the edge of a picture. There's loads of problems. There's loads of having to get your camera cleaned as soon as you start taking lenses off. If you're going to go on holiday and you want something with a 21 time zoom, and you want to be able to shoot whatever you want at any distance at a high enough resolution that you can crop it to make and still get a decent picture if, you know, you can't zoom in enough or you've missed a bit, this sort of camera is perfect. And that's the market they've gone for, and that's the market they're very, very good at. These things have to get better purely because of, there's no way they can sell a new one if it's just the same as an old one.
I think one of the things that bothers me a little bit as well, though, is if you look at the a lot of these cameras, they're all, the scenes element now, where they're going for these picture modes that are Instagram-like, and they're trying to give you this experience of Instagram with the raw image that you shoot, and yet it's still stuck inside the camera, and you've got to put it onto a computer before you can boost it, because there's one of these ranges got the Wi-Fi in it, but the bridges haven't. And I'm looking at those thinking, what's the point in all the scene stuff that's gone on? What's the issue with why can't you just let us have the original photo and then give us some specific software? You know, it's dead easy to make a little aperture program that will just sit in, or a filter, or a plug-in for Elements or something like that. That would be far cheaper probably than the R&D that's gone into making it in camera and ruining your core image.
Yeah, I mean, if they had a live, I don't know how it works, but if they've got like a live view and you can overlay before you press the shot, for instance, if you're shooting into the sun and you need some sort of filter, Instagram-like filter, to get you out of that situation, it should be an option that you can see on the live view screen before you press the button. Then that would work, but as long as it's stored both images, you know, the original and the adulterated. But a lot of these things, they do it as a post-process. I mean, Nikon's been doing it for years with what they have inbuilt delighting, I think it is.
Yeah.
It's horrible. I mean, if you need to use delighting, then don't buy Nikon. Just go and buy a small compact camera made by somebody that knows what they're doing. You know, there's lots of issues. There's lots of add-ons because they can, and it's a selling point to people that don't really know. You know, they're buying it because of the sales assistant says, but this one's got 700 filters. If you don't know that you don't actually want them in the first place, then it's a selling point.
Yes. Oh, I've missed the story. Hang on, I've stopped there. Pentax are pulling out of the compact market. They're going to focus on DSLR and mirrorless stuff, mirrorless technology. I don't know why I've shown a picture of a Lumix there.
Because it does look a little bit like the Pentax.
Now, there you go. There's the Pentax. No, because the Pentax one looks decidedly crappier. I can't think of a worse-looking camera than that, to be honest. Maybe even the Apple II was worse than that.
I have got some disposable old film ones that look 400 like
400 or whatever it was. A Pentax doing the right thing here to focus on DSLR and mirrorless market, because they've always been very strong in the DSLR market. And I've got to say, mm-hmm. I've never owned a Pentax Compact, and I don't know anyone else that has either.
Well, I'll tell you what, when compact zoom cameras came out, and I want to say this was like the early 90s, the IQ zooms, I mean, for a long time, couldn't be touched. And then Olympus kind of really started to take over with their stylus zoom cameras in the late 90s. But even then, Pentax had some really, I mean, they were making some really great cameras, and especially at the for a long time, the only long zoom cameras you could get were from Pentax, and they were well built, and they were solid, and the lenses were sharp, and you know, for something you could reasonably carry around with you, it really couldn't be beat. So there was a time when they made really great compact cameras, and another market they have done really well in, I think, and always have, is the kind of waterproof, outdoorsy, tough camera. When they had the IQ zooms with film, they had the WR series, and they were solid. They were built like a tank. I mean, you could literally toss them around. They could go underwater 20, 30 feet. And they've done that with their digital cameras now, too. And I've tested them and used them, and they're really good. I mean, I shot some snorkeling videos and pictures in the Caribbean with one. I mean, it worked great. Wasn't the best camera in the world, but I literally never worried about what was going to happen to the camera. It got beach sand on it. It went in the ocean. It went in the pool. You know, you could drop it. We never tried this, but it can go down to like freezing temperatures and everything. So it's a tough little camera. It does exactly what, you know, the box says it will. So they've had some success with compacts, but not to the level where I think it's a real, it's a bad thing for Pentax if they don't sell compacts anymore. You know, aside from
it's a very competitive market.
Yeah, and aside from their waterproof one, I don't think anything that they have now is really unique or outstanding or rises above the rest. So I don't think it's any great loss, except for that particular model, and I think they do really well in that category. And it's something that's kind of gotten popular lately. Like Olympus now has like their stylus tough cameras. I'm trying to remember who I saw a press release recently. I think Nikon has one now, even the Coolpix tough camera or weather camera or whatever they call it. So I think it's worthwhile to at least find a way to keep that camera going. And I think the Pentax name works for that because they've have a reputation ever since the, you know, early 90s for building cameras like this. But beyond that, it doesn't surprise me as a direction at all.
Alex, any thoughts?
Yeah, it's just Ricoh bought them, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ricoh make their own compacts. So maybe they're just using this as a way to... So they're not, you know, basically they're not producing two sets of cameras in the same market.
Though, to be fair, they're not in the same dirt, are they, as
Pentax? No, but what they could do, I mean... Yeah, but I mean, what they can do is they can sort of broaden... Ricoh can broaden their range in the compacts, which will allow Pentax to be... I mean, if you've got a camera that concentrates on one part of the market, whether it's true or not, it does give the impression that you have more expertise in that part of the market. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Hasselblad started bringing out point-and-shoots, it really wouldn't look good on their £20,000 medium-format cameras, whether it actually had any bearing or not. So maybe this is their thinking, have two separate entities within the same company branded with two separate labels. Because they can take any of the good performance and good ideas that Pentax had or those cameras and put them into the new Ricoh system and vice versa into the SLR market. You know, it's a I'd see it more of a rebranding exercise than anything else.
Yep. Hmm. Yep, good point. This week's six things comes from Mary via Twitter. Thanks, Mrs. She says, on a more commercial track than usual, perhaps, are there any tips, tricks, or tools that you could suggest for making sure I get good photos for the items I want to sell on eBay? Start us off then, chaps.
Here's the easiest thing to do. Set up a table near some windows. Wait until the sun is not shining directly in the window so you get some indirect lighting. Take everything off the table except the thing you're going to shoot. What else can we do here? Be sure you're... get really close or zoom in as close as you can to fill the frame with the image. How many is that? Four?
You only have to do two at most.
Oh, well.
So. About a half, I'd say.
I have to do this all the time, not just for eBay, but to shoot, products I'm doing reviews of and things like that for ours all the time. So I have to do this setup all the time. And I have to do it quick, and I don't have any really any equipment to speak of as far as like lighting or anything. So I always have to make it look the best I can with basically zero equipment and all natural light. But it can be done. It's really, get as close as you can. Focus on the thing you're trying to shoot. Try to eliminate any background distractions that you can.
Mm. Alex,
The number one is exactly what Chris said, but make sure there's no rubbish in the background. If you have to go and get a white sheet from the linen cupboard and put it down, make the bottom white, pin it to the wall or stick it on a chair. I mean, it's something I do at work quite often because of the actual shape of a chair. If I've got to shoot a very small piece of sculpture, for instance, and there's nowhere I can set it up, I tend to use paper. Because I tend to have that with me, but if you use a chair, so you lay, I'll say this, a bit of bedclothes. If you lay it along the bottom and along the top, you've now got almost like an infinity wall because you're talking about something quite small, and that's something I use quite a lot at work. But again, just reiterating what Chris said is you need a soft light. Now, if you've got a main light or you've got a couple of angle poises, that's a great idea. But you must diffuse the light in some way. And again, if you've got a light piece of white material, something very small, a bit of net curtaining sometimes can do it as well. If you just drape that over your light, you might need more of it. But if you drape it, and that will diffuse it. So the shadows will be there, but they won't be so harsh. So, I mean, that's a really quick... Everyone will have all of these things in their house somewhere. Grease-proof paper works quite well as well. So diffuse the light, but make sure there's no rubbish in the background. But... just one last thing is, I'd say there's nothing worse on eBay than when you go to buy something and you see the pack shot that someone's pulled off the internet. Because I always go, no, I don't trust that person, because if they can't show me their version that might have a scratch or a dink or something, then I'm like, I don't know where you're getting this from. If you can't be bothered to take a picture, I can't be bothered to look. So if what you've got has got a couple of defects, mention the defects and make sure you don't try and hide them. Because of an honest picture is what's going to sell it, not a pristine picture that you've pulled off the internet from the company that put it out originally.
Hey, my tip was going to be make sure it looks real. That definitely echoed. Absolutely, mate. Spot on. The other thing you should use as well, if you're talking about stuff to use for backdrops and that kind of thing, is 4-ply toilet paper, which is untextured. You get 4-ply Andrex. It pulls apart into 4 pieces for a start, and there you've got graduations of density. You hang it up and provide your crew, so you shoot across the folds so you can slightly overlap it. But as long as you shoot across the folds and not into the overlaps, then it will blow out pretty happily with a standard flash. And if your flash is a bit strong because you're close up, take the toilet paper and tape it over the top of the flash and it'll diffuse your flash as well.
Oh, just because you're talking about if you've got a tripod, use a tripod.
True.
I was going to suggest, too...
And it also works for microphones, says the chat room. Thank you.
It's very true.
Go on, mate.
One thing that I've done real successfully is you can go to craft supply stores or even look for wrapping paper, but you can find like plain matte wrapping papers, and that is way cheaper than going to the camera store and buying background paper.
Absolutely. Questions. I've been discussing with my friends the age-old question, is it better to leave a photo as shot or use any means possible to improve it in software afterwards? I'm of the opinion that the shot is the honest approach. It didn't go down well as they all use Instagram for everything. What does the panel think? We've kind of started this one, I guess, but you know, give me a 10-word answer. Thank you, James of Stratford, London.
A 10-word answer?
Yeah, I mean, is the honest approach better, or is it should you use Photoshop, etc. afterwards?
What's the context again?
I've been discussing with my friends the age-old question: is it better to leave as shot or improve with software?
Just in general.
Yeah.
So it's not like any specific context. I think just whatever works for you in that case, whatever works for you. I mean, there are certain instances where I think
sitting pussy Forsman.
Oh no, that's my honest answer. I mean, if straight shots are what you like and that's what works for you, just do the straight shots. There's nothing wrong with that. But on the other hand, there's nothing wrong with using Photoshop if it gets the results you want.
Thanks, Matt.
Now, if you're a photojournalist, you're a scientist, you know, you're a doctor, there are different requirements and they have different considerations. But, you know,
This sounded mates down the pub.
Yeah.
Alex.
All right. My simple words. I find Instagram is like painting by numbers. Too many people use Instagram as their first option. I've taken a picture. I'm going to make it artistic. Well, to me, art is something that is individual. It's something that you create out of your own mind. It's not something that comes out of the bottom of a cornflakes packet. You know, and this is my cornflakes packet version of art. This is how I say it. If you want to use an Instagram filter on something, take the picture, get the picture as happy and as lovely as you possibly can. And if you actually think it'll be your artistic interpretation to add some sort of filter on it, then fine, but just don't do it as this is what I do to every single picture, because it's overkill and it's not art if it's the standard.
No, I mean, I think the first thing you got to see is don't, everyone says Photoshop, but and I'm cautious, because if I go to customers and say I'm going to Photoshop images after I've taken them, they all go, oh no, hang on, no, we don't want Photoshop, we want, I'm like, no, I'm going to straighten it, I'm going to correct it for color and contrast, and that's it. And they go, oh, right, okay. So now I've started saying, well, after I've shot the photos, I need to correct them for crop, straightening, that kind of stuff. And they go, oh, yeah, that's fine, no problem at all. And that's where your key is. That's the stuff that every photo has ever done since the dawn of photography. Everyone has cropped and straightened and adjusted for tone, dodged, burned. Those kind of things in Photoshop are perfectly acceptable. And even if you're talking about photojournalism, there is nothing wrong with doing those things. It's when you add stuff, take stuff away, when you manipulate colours to an extraordinary level, or when you start to jellyfy the image, that's when you've got your issue, definitely. And that's a choice thing. That's an art thing, definitely, at that point.
But, I mean, the framing of a photo in the first place is a crop.
Yeah, providing you're good enough to actually shoot the frame that you've got.
Yeah.
I was at a wedding at the weekend, and the photographer and videographer were far too intrusive for my liking. They appeared to be directing the bride and groom so much that they looked shocked by it all. The priest, in the end, had to say something. Do you guys ever do weddings or such functions? And if so, how do you go about getting the correct balance? Simon of Heathrow.
I have done a lot of weddings, and I will say, yes, it is extremely difficult. It's a very fine line that you have to navigate. And I'm sure I'm going to offend somebody here, but I'm just going to say it. You know, people can be real jerks. People can be real jerks, and I've been to weddings where everyone involved was just being, I want to say other words that would just bleep, but I mean, honestly, the groom and the groomsmen are all, every time you turn around, they're getting hammered, taking drinks out of flasks. The bride and the bridesmaids are just running off and leaving. You know, the in-laws are yelling at me because they want aunt, grandma, whoever is like 90 years old and going to die. And they want her to be in every picture, but she can barely stand up. It can turn into a circus really fast. And sometimes you just have to, like, you know, you got a job to do and you've got to get it done. They're paying you, you know, however many, you know, in the case of, you know, some weddings, you know, thousands of dollars, and you've got a job and you've got to deliver. So sometimes you just have to, you have to be gruff because it gets the job done. You know, it's not like that all the time. Sometimes you have really great people who are really friendly and, you know, you give some direction and they're more than happy to follow it. And, you know, they have their own ideas and they want to share it with you and they work with you. That's great. And really, it's a spectrum. It's a spectrum.
I would say planning and be as intrusive as you feel like your customer wants you to be. I mean, if if they've said we want this picture while the ceremony's going on, then you fight your corner with the vicar or whoever and say they want the picture. That's what I'm getting paid for. I'm here to fight it out with you. You talk to them if you don't want me to. Alex, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't do weddings anymore. I do functions. I do business functions, and one of the things I do is when I go in there, I speak to the person that seems most important, and I say, okay, this is the situation. I don't want to get in the way of what you're doing, but you want certain pictures, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, if I feel to get the picture you asked me for, I have to be intrusive, I would like to come to you and ask you as the senior person in this room to make sure people are doing what you want them to do. And I sort of pass the buck to them because I sort of... The way of doing that is you want X amount of people. They're all drinking. They're all talking. They're all chatting up the secretary or whatever it happens to be. If you click your finger and say, all right, guys, I want you, and you there because I want this guy to get your picture. You can go and play your games afterwards. Then that's fine. But I tend to try and get the person that I think's the most in charge on my side right at the beginning. And I just tell him what the rules are. I can do it, but
get,
I won't
get
be able
someone
to do
else
it.
To be the bad cop is what you're saying.
But I can do it, but they're not going to listen to me. So if you want to do it and you want to do it as quick and efficiently as possible, I'm going to need your help. And I've never had anyone turn me down. They all understand the point I'm making. Mm-hmm. So as Ewan said, prepare, but also prepare to have the biggest, ugliest, or most important person on your side.
Question 3. Our cat likes to sleep on the windowsill, and my teenage son wanted to take a nice picture of him from outside. He only had a phone camera with him to hand. Whenever he tried, all he could get was a reflection or some pretty awful images. Could you please give me some tips on shooting through glass with or without all the proper equipment? The dad with no idea. There is no signature on that one. Go on then, Chris.
The problem with shooting through glass is when you're on the outside in particular, you're going to have reflections you have to deal with. And there's really no getting around that. So you either need more light inside. You need a polarizer to reduce or eliminate the reflections in the glass. Or you need to change your angle so the reflections aren't or least apparent, I guess.
I mean, I would say look at what you're wearing, because if you're trying to take a shirt through glass and you're wearing you're trying to take a picture through glass and you're wearing a white shirt, you're going to be huge in that image. So always wear dark colours. Always try and look at the angle of incidence of the light to the angle of reflection of the light and make sure you're not in line with it. Outside of that, you're taking a nice picture of a something that's outside. So deliberately be outside. Deliberately sit the picture up so that you can see the windowsill, you can see the frames of the window, and people know it's a picture from outside too, and it'll probably look better than if you're trying to make an inside shot look better from the outside. Alex, last word?
Yeah, last word is you need as much light on the subject as you can get. If you need artificial light, say, to shoot through your window, I shoot through glass all the time. And the one thing I do, in my tripod bag, I have a ton of black cloths. And they go on my tripod, they go over my camera, and they also go over me because of I'm always wearing a white shirt or something. You can see it. So, I mean, in that situation, I would have put the camera... Because was it a cell phone or something, wasn't it? I put a camera nearer a window, and I'd actually pull my coat over my head, and I'd sort of use myself to block out all the light I possibly could as a reflection, because it's what I do all the time. So as much light as you can on the object through the glass, and block off any reflection of yourself with either black cloths or, you know, when I'm taking with my large format film cameras, I still have to put a black hood over my head like you used to see in the old time films. This is the only time, it's the only way I can see into the back of the damn thing. And what that also does, it stops me being a reflection in the picture.
Are you saying that you go out working and you don't have a milk tray man's outfit?
Not normally,
specifically
no.
Specifically for
but I do you tend should. To always leave a black jacket in the car.
You should be Mr. 60s.
So. And I have a ton of velvet black cloths, and quite often I have to wear them to stop myself being in the picture.
I wear black for another reason.
Yes, sir.
This podcast and all the others wouldn't be possible without UK2.net. They're great. We love them to bits. If you would like to buy their services, then please do, because in doing it, you'll support us as well, providing you go to our website first and click through. If you want VPS domains, VPN, you want DNS management, any of those kind of things, dedicated servers, virtual servers, then it's up to you. But you come to our website, britishtechnetwork.com, use the click through to UK2. They'll know we sent you. Use it even if you just want to sign into your account, perhaps. And then buy whatever you want to get. And when you go to the checkout, we've had an email this week that says, how do I put in multiple codes? Well, the key is not to put in your payment details to start with. So have your basket ready when you get to the end. Go to your promotional code. And when you've put the promotional code in, hit return. And what will happen is that the checkout will recycle and the basket will be down by whatever percentages you get off the code, and then put in the next one and do the same thing, next one do the same thing, and then only put your payment details in when you've reduced your basket to the fullest level. If you want to know what the codes are, go on the sponsors page on our website. You'll see it on the top right-hand corner at the web page, and please support them because we love them to bits. Thank you, UK2. Where can we get a hold of you fellas, Mr. Forsman?
You can get a hold of me on rstechno.com or on Twitter at ForzMac.
Thank you, sir. And we'll see you on the Mac show in a bit.
Oi.
And Mr. Fox, where are you, son?
Okay, for all positive feedback, it's Alex G. Fox on Twitter. And all negative feedback and insults, it's at Ewan Rankin on Twitter.
I love you, dude. Thank you. I get enough negative comments about who and what I am.
Yeah, but don't bring the family into
it. I regularly spend Friday nights sat with my head in my hands crying.
Oh, dear. I'll come and I can't even fake that I care.
No, it's because I'm drunk, because I've been over Kismet and had a fantastic crew, which I'm going to have tonight as well. We're going to be back again next week with more of the photo news as normal. Aaron Clayton will be here next week as well. He's going to be in the studio with me because he's coming up to stay for the weekend. So it should be a good laugh. If you're not doing anything, come by Birmingham. We're all going over Kismet. What I did say to Aaron is we should make the faith of British Tech Network mean that everyone during the course of their lifetime has to have a pilgrimage to the Kismet. Otherwise,
well, my record of going for a curry with you has never been that good.
No, mate, because you've been to the wrong curry houses. Apparently, Andy Lee is going to take me to the best curry house in London next time in Brick Lane. So we shall see. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.